The AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by IBM Watson, combining AI with Internet of Things data to help growers increase yields, improve quality, and drive sustainability. Well, the waiting game for the July supply and demand report is almost over, and the only thing that I'll say with extreme confidence is that as soon as the numbers are released from the World Ag Outlook Board this morning, traders will begin looking forward to the next update from the National Ag Statistics Service.
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk.
All
right. This morning, we'll talk with Kevin Fulter from the University. No, it's me! It's me!
Wow!
We're going to talk with Kevin Fulton from the U of Florida, Mississippi Commissioner of Ag and Commerce, Andy Gibson. And later we've got Rodney Connor from Indigo Ag. Right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. And now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
It's you? Is it really you?
It really, really is.
Oh my gosh. It's been so long since we've talked.
I know.
Wow, it's good to talk with you again, brother. How are you?
Good to talk to you too, man. Really good, really good. We haven't even really had a chance. I haven't heard any reflections on you from your trip. We haven't talked about my little scamper off. But here we are, back to the grind, baby.
Absolutely, back at it. Back at it in a big day. Big day, not only for the show, but for the markets.
I understand there's some sort of report that we're expected at some point.
Yeah, the crop production report. Give us a winter wheat and spring wheat crop update. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the supply and demand estimates from the World Ag Outlook Board. Mm-hmm. So you don't know this, or you probably don't know this, but the reason that I was so specific between the World Ag Outlook Board and the National Ag Statistics Service is because I decided to get on a soapbox recently.
Okay.
And make sure that everybody fully understands that USDA is a generic term. If you're really going to understand the process and how these numbers are arrived at, you need to know the difference between the World Ag Outlook Board and the National Ag Statistics Service.
Okay. That makes sense.
So I've been doing that this week.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. That's a big job.
Well,
how do you feel like it's going so far?
I think it's okay. I think it's okay.
Good.
I feel like some people have. I've gotten some feedback that says, you know what? I appreciate this. Mm-hmm. I appreciate this. Mm-hmm. But enough is enough. Let's move on.
Fair enough. Yeah.
I love it. No, you know what? I'm really close to moving on from it. I really am.
You're really close, but not quite there?
But not quite there yet. Because we've got to get through this report. And this report is, but when we get the report in less than an hour now, when we get that report, the supply and demand report and the crop production report for wheat in particular, it will be... It's got the potential to be a trend-setting report again today.
Okay.
If not for corn, then for soybeans. And if not for soybeans, then for corn. Honestly, it could go either way. But the one thing that I will say with certainty is as soon as we get this report out of the way, people are going to be starting to talk about the August crop production report from NASS that we will get, August 11th or 12th, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
All right. What's in the news, bud?
Well, Chip, according to a report from Reuters, sources say President Trump's request for a review of EPA's plans for small refiner exemptions is delaying decisions on 38 still pending SRE requests. The president is expected to meet with Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue and EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler possibly next week to discuss the matter. Biofuel proponents got the president's attention when Trump visited Iowa last month, and farmers raised concerns over those SREs. Mm-hmm. Now, U.S. and Chinese negotiators have talked via telephone this week, although Beijing has reportedly reshuffled its cast of negotiators to lean more in favor of hardliners. A former China analyst for the CIA told the Washington Post, quote, Commerce Minister Zhang Shang, regarded by some White House officials as a hardliner, has assumed new prominence in the talks, saying, quote, I am sure his instructions are to get tougher with the U.S. Meanwhile, U.S. exporters are still waiting for China's promised immediate and substantial purchases of U.S. ag goods to materialize. Most recently, that pledge was offered by Beijing in exchange for the U.S. holding off on increasing tariffs on Chinese goods and towing a softer line with Chinese telecom giant Huawei. Yeah. But sources in China report from the Chinese perspective, those purchases are contingent on meaningful progress being made in trade negotiations, Chip.
Yeah, and there was another Trump tweet out this morning. He said Mexico is doing great at the border, but China is letting us down in that they have not been buying the agricultural products from our great farmers, capital F on farmers there. I don't know why. That they said they would.
It.
Yeah, well, sure. Hopefully they will start soon.
Yep. Well, U.S. Trade Representative Bob Lighthizer will meet with members of Congress today to discuss the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. Lighthizer hopes to woo Democratic legislators to agree to ratification. Democrats under House Speaker Nancy Pelosi had previously demanded labor reforms in Mexico, among other provisions, before they would forward the bill. Yeah. But last week, Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa said he believed the partisan divide on the issue was shrinking and that Speaker Pelosi was working to bring young Democrats closer to allowing the measure to move forward. CNBC reported yesterday the White House expects to send the implementing bill sometime after Sept 1, which would give Lighthizer more time to secure Democrat approval. You're snickering.
Pelosi's just going to have to move forward without those quote-unquote young House members because they're at war.
Right.
Davis, they are at war. And it's so discouraging. The tone of my voice is because this is so what we don't want to see happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's so discouraging.
Right. It's like letting the kids choose where we go to dinner. You're going to wind up at Chuck E. Cheese every time.
There's that. But the fighting within the parties. I mean, the Republican Party has been down this path before too with the Tea Party.
Yep.
You know, that got us nowhere.
Right.
Got us nowhere. This is going to get us nowhere, too. Mm-hmm. We got to move on, buddy.
Move on.
All right. Thank you. We'll talk to you again soon.
Sure.
All right. Let's bring in Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. How are you, Greg?
Good morning, Chip. I'm very well.
Good, good, good. You know, we talk about the drought up in Canada and the impact that it's having on the wheat market, but it's got a potential to have an impact on cattle trade, too, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's right. You know, Canada they have about 10% of the cattle that we have here. But interesting is that Canadian feeder cattle imports are already up 22% in the last 4 months. So there's a potential that could continue because of the drought. You know, higher grain prices up there is going to encourage them to send those feeder cattle south rather than feeding them there. You know, that could add pressure to feeder cattle prices here that are already under pressure because of our higher grain prices.
Right.
You know, not saying this is going to have a huge impact, Chip, but certainly one that we need to watch, and especially as we move later into the fall. Just going to, you know, could put added pressure on our prices, and we're already expecting that. So,
yeah, you know, Greg, you've talked about this on the show before, too, and we've got some good grass conditions out in the Central Plains right now. I mean, they could just be coming down to take advantage of that grass, right?
Well, absolutely. And in fact, USDA says 69% of U.S. ranges and pastures rated good to excellent. You know, that's way better than we've been in the last few years.
No doubt.
In fact, a lot of people, you know, I'm sure you're seeing this on social media too. People are having trouble getting hay put up that's not rained on.
Exactly. Greg, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you later. That's Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. We've got Kevin Folta from University of Florida up next.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Performance Beef. Capture every pound, every dollar today.
With recent advancements in technology and more usable data being created than ever before, the future is bright for agriculture. The IBM Watson Decision Platform for Agriculture collects hyperlocal Internet of Things data to create an electronic field record that is deliverable on a scalable, security-rich cloud platform. The solution applies AI and predictive analytics to this data to generate actionable, field-specific insights that food companies, grain processors, produce distributors, and farmers can use to help improve crop management. At IBM, we help agribusinesses accelerate their journey to cloud and transform into cognitive enterprises by combining Watson AI with accurate weather and farm data to help growers around the world make better decisions about preseason planning, plowing, planting, spraying, and harvesting. To learn more, visit ibm.biz/agriculture. Let's go to Miller, Missouri, and have a conversation with Travis Merrick from Glionda Angus Farms. Travis, tell me about Glionda Angus Farms and what makes you unique.
Glionda Angus Farms has been in the family for about 50 years with a focus on carcass quality, feed efficiency, and maternal performance. We have about 300 cows. We sell 50 to 60 bulls a year. Our biggest thing we do here is we retain ownership on our cattle to collect as much data as possible, and herd health is probably our most important thing we focus on.
Yeah, okay, herd health and collecting that data, it's got to be done electronically. And it's so important to your operation. What kind of protocols do you have in place to set cattle up for success in the feedlot?
Biggest thing here is our vaccination protocols. We use our veterinarian. We work very closely with Merck Animal Health. We switched to them the last couple of years because we were not satisfied in our overall herd health program, and we're seeing a very good increase in our herd health since then.
That's fantastic, Travis. Sounds like you found a program that really works for you. What goes into that program?
We start our calves when they are 3 months old. They're vaccinated with Nasalgen Intranasal to increase protection against pneumonia. Prior to weaning, they get Vista once to help with the respiratory, and then post-weaning, we get Vista 5. The reason that we put so much time into our herd health program is that obviously sick cattle don't grade as well. We've prided ourselves on having quality carcasses, and over the last 3 years, we've graded 99.5% choice and prime, with 2019 being our first year that we've ever graded 100% choice and prime.
Boy, what a testament right there to what animal health means to the performance in the feed yard. Hey, it sounds like you keep busy off the farm as well with the involvement in the Missouri Cattlemen's Association. Why is that important to you, Travis?
It's important to me because we need to get as many younger producers to get involved in our industry and get the next generation set up for success.
Man, you're leading the way. Thank you so much, Travis. That is Travis Merrick with Glionda Angus Farms down in Millen, Missouri. To learn more about vaccination strategies at weaning, talk to your Merck Animal Health representative and visit mahcattle.com.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous 1 month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
You're listening to the new AgriTalk with Chip Flory and me, the handsome newsman, Davis Michelson.
You're so humble.
Well, you know, I want to be real with people and understand who they're listening to.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm Chip. That's Davis.
Yes, here I am. Oh, let me adjust my mic. There we go.
Yeah, give us a call today, guys. We've got some very interesting conversations that are going to be taking place, and a lot of it's going to have to do with the positioning of conventional meat products. Do we have to start calling it that now?
I think maybe we do.
The plant-based meat, the fake meat, the lab-grown meat, the we're going to be talking a lot about meat labeling in today's show, there's no better way to kick it off than a conversation with Kevin Folta from the University of Florida. He's a professor there. He is also the chairman of the Horticultural Sciences Department at the University of Florida. And you know what? Before I welcome him on here, I think I got to say that most would agree with this. He's also a thought leader.
Yes.
Which is very important. He's been a voice of scientific reason, scientific logic, I think is how I would describe it. There are some out there that would disagree with me on that, but so. and he is somebody that I think is a very willing participant and a much-needed participant in the conversation about food out there. Yeah. Let's bring him in right now. Kevin Foltz, University of Florida. How are you, Kevin? It's good to talk with you again.
Oh, wonderful to speak to you, Chip. That was a very nice introduction. Thank you so much.
You bet. You bet. You know, I said that you're a voice of scientific reason and maybe scientific logic. I would agree with that. Some people wouldn't agree with that. And quite frankly, I don't care. But the ability of those that would not agree with me on that, the ability of them to just freely, anonymously, and free range comment on that and hammer on you with your logical approach to science has been some incentive for you to leave Twitter, which is very discouraging to me, Kevin.
Well, it's discouraging to me, too, because it's a wonderful way to spread information and to share news. And I think I will be back in a very much a one-way door kind of approach soon.
Okay.
I miss it. I don't have the ability to share and communicate science, and it's really unfortunate.
Yeah. What was there a last straw, or was it just a continuous piling on that you've had to deal with over years?
It's continuous, and it's piling on, and it's getting extremely disparaging. It's getting to the point where they're talking about me driving drunk and beating my wife, and you know, I mean, it's getting into that level of slander. Yeah. And it was having a lot of an effect on me personally. And the problem is that if it was just me, it wouldn't matter. But they fold in my university, they fold in the leadership at my university. And now donors are involved, and it basically is a way to target somebody and drive their voice of reason out of an important conversation because you disparage them in front of their employer and in front of the people they serve.
Yeah. You know, I've gone through some of the threads that you've been involved with over the year, many of the threads on Twitter that you've been involved. And part of what I find so discouraging about it, Kevin, is that a lot of the responses are driven by bots, by the robots, Twitter bots out there, and they're not real people. They are responses that are triggered by keywords that are found in some of your tweets, but they just are so outlandish, so ridiculous in the comments that I can see where it would get very frustrating having to deal with that on a regular basis.
Yeah, it starts to affect you personally. And then I'm a tough guy. That stuff doesn't faze me that much. But I'll tell you one thing. When you read about yourself every single day in a negative way and you see it being broadcast to your university, to their donors, to your boss, it starts to affect you because you can't control it. And then you're in a total tailspin that you can't fix other than leaving the medium.
Well, and Kevin, I got to believe that your bosses at the University of Florida were probably starting to look a little cockeyed at you through the corner of their eye. I mean, and wondering, is it really worth it?
And that's the problem. That it spawns public records requests. It costs millions of taxpayer dollars to fulfill people posting my bank account information, my Social Security number, my home address, and saying I'm a baby killer. You know, all these things start piling up, and your family, you know, my wife gets concerned. I mean, everybody who's involved, you know, the dog starts barking crazy at 3 a.m. I live out in the country. You're wondering what's going on, you know?
Yeah.
So it just is, it's a kind of terrorism. It's in a lot of ways. And, I'm not folding up. I'm changing my strategy, and we will win this eventually.
Well, and Kevin, Davis Michelson here. You got to take some kind of, solace or self-gratification maybe in the idea that you've hit a nerve and that you're saying something that someone doesn't want said, though. Am I hearing you right here?
You're right. And my therapist always says that time will be kind. And that when I look back on this in 10 years, I'll say that I was hurt for teaching the truth and for telling people, teaching the truth.
Right.
And so that's the message to your audience, is that we have to practice speaking the truth about food and farming and about agriculture at every chance we get, including social media. Because if we're all in there, they can't target one of us.
Amen.
And, and so that is why, people say, I don't want to be involved in Twitter. I don't want to be involved in Facebook conversations. You must be, because this is where the conversation is taking place.
Okay. So you're changing strategy in here, which leads us into a conversation about labeling. And I don't know if you and I are going to agree on this quite yet. I'm open-minded to it, Kevin. I'm open-minded to it. But you're thinking that it's time for us, for the industry, to kind of change gears when it comes to words like milk, meat, burgers, right?
Exactly. I see what's happening here, and it really is. I think the optics are super bad. I understand from the industry side. I have friends who raise cattle, and we have these conversations. It is a question of these new laws and new ideas about don't call almond milk milk, don't call a veggie burger a burger. It's sending the wrong message, and it's making an industry appear to be insecure, to be nervous by looking over its shoulder at what are probably not really products that will have an impact ultimately. And it also is not playing the long game. We're talking about a rising number of people in the middle class worldwide who are going to be screaming for meat. And do we have the land, the water, the grain to be able to support that? Mm-hmm. So I believe that it's time for everybody to kind of chill out a little bit about this and just let the words flow. Make a better product, do it sustainably, and show us through social media it's a better product sustainably produced. That's what wins you with the public.
Well, the better problem isn't difficult because it's a natural product that we're talking about coming from farms. But the problem, the concern that I have with this, Kevin, is is control the right word? I think control is the right word. Don't you want to control the definition of the words that are used in a debate?
I agree with that in most cases. But in this case, I think the optics of it make it look bad. When you're saying that you will go to prison in Mississippi for calling a vegan hot dog a hot dog rather than a tofu cylinder, can you imagine the conversations in the prison? What are you in for? I called a veggie patty a burger. It's just that it just makes the industry look insecure to the eyes of the public, and I don't think that's the way a strong industry needs to portray itself.
But if you are a vegan company, like we're going to be talking about Upton's Naturals in the next segment with the Mississippi Ag Commissioner, if you are a vegan-based company, why do you even want to call a product meat or a burger? I mean, wouldn't you want to wash your hands of that and get away from it?
Well, you'd think so, but you're talking about the familiar form of the product, so it's something that someone might recognize. It's like the chocolate Easter egg. Peanut butter is not butter, and you don't have the dairy industry saying we need to call this peanut spread. We really have to be careful because we're starting to get into what look like very petty conversations. And if you got a great product, which I would say the meat industry should say, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery. Call it whatever you want. We're going to continue to make the best, most sustainable products in the world, and the American farmer does it better than anybody. Here it comes.
All right. Well, I tell you what, Kevin, I always have looked forward to my dose of your thoughts and ideas on Twitter. And since I can't get them on Twitter for now, I'll just go ahead and tell you, if you've got a message that you want to get out to the people out there, you just let me know and we'll get you on, okay?
Oh, I love it. I mean, I have messages all the time.
I know.
Just ask my wife. She listens to me all the time. Now, I appreciate having the opportunity to speak to you and to speak to the place where I used to live. I miss you guys up there.
Very cool. Kevin, we'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Thank you very much.
That's Kevin Folta, right. University of Florida.
Save time with Performance Beef. With real-time access from anywhere, it's never been easier to automate feeding, generate real-time closeouts, create accurate invoices, or analyze trends in feed efficiencies, costs, and performance all in one place. Capture every pound, every dollar with Performance Beef. Follow Performance Beef on Twitter or Facebook for the latest news and your chance to win a prize. Today's prize word is data.
In this industry, your name is everything. It's the legacy you fight to live up to and work to leave behind. Merck Animal Health Brands have a 50-year history of providing the products cattle need to stay healthy. With innovation, passion, and integrity, we'll do what's right for your operation and for you. This is why Merck Animal Health works. Visit MAHcattle.com to see how Merck Animal Health can work for you.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, here we are. We've got a half an hour to go to the supply and demand report and the crop production report from NASS and the World Ag Outlook Board. What do you think? Not a whole lot of action going on in the grains.
No, kind of the calm before the storm, I guess, assuming that maybe there will be a storm here in a half an hour with some of that data. But, I think going into the report, the number that I want to see is corn production. And that's weird because this month isn't a crop production report for corn, meaning that there won't be an estimate. It'll just be a projection from the World Board. But yet that's probably the number that will determine what the read of the report is, meaning how the market reacts will probably be driven by that corn crop estimate or corn crop projection.
Yeah, the forecast there on the corn crop, I agree with you there. But and a close second to that is going to be the bean crop projection.
Yeah, I would say it's a close second only because, the market typically tends to favor corn just a little bit over soybeans. But I wouldn't argue with you on that. And, what happens with those corn crop projections and soybean crop projections will impact the ending stocks.
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt. All right. Some negative numbers going on in the livestock trade.
Yeah, you know what? We had two nice days up in the hog market, and here we are. We're pulling back some. Probably not too surprising, I guess. We've gotten some of those the August hog contract well out in front of the cash market at this point in time, so it just needs to pull back a little bit. Still waiting on active cash trade in the cattle market.
Very good. All right. We'll look forward to your reaction to the report, Brian. It's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is the best of tractor tales as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, the best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
Hey, AgriTalk listeners, this is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio today. That's profarmer.com/radio.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
The IBM Watson Decision Platform for Agriculture, helping to feed a hungry world with the power of AI. Mississippi Queen. Well, that's pretty appropriate right there, isn't it, Davis?
Oh, so appropriate.
Yeah, great conversation with Kevin Folta.
Man.
He is changing strategies.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that he doesn't want to be part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean that he doesn't want to listen to both sides. I mean, the whole time to change strategy and the imitation is the greatest form of flattery idea. Like I said, I still might need a little bit more convincing on that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I agree.
Yeah.
And he's in a tough spot there when he's
certainly
being slandered out in the full view of, you know, like he mentioned, his bosses, the supporters and all sorts of people. And because social media, you can get on there and say whatever you want about anyone you want at any time and just throw it out there. And especially if you've got these bots after you.
Yeah.
Crikey.
Yeah. And once you ring a bell, you don't unring it.
Right. Right.
And there have been many bells rung on Kevin Fultz over the last few years. All right. Let's move on. Continue the conversation here. We're going to bring in Mississippi Commissioner of Agriculture and Commerce, Andy Gibson. He joins us right now. Commissioner Gibson, thank you so much for making time for us today.
Hello. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Hey, we're thinking about you down there with Barry continuing to develop in the Gulf. I'm sure that you and farmers across the state of Mississippi are preparing for some rough weather in the days ahead.
Yeah, it's looking really serious, and we're we appreciate your thoughts and your prayers. And you know, on top of that, we're experiencing this tremendous flooding in the South Delta that's really been flooded since March. So these folks who've been underwater since March are about to possibly get another round, and so it's a serious and very delicate situation. Thank you for that.
Yeah, it certainly is, Commissioner. I'm telling you, this is the high water situation is something that's not going to go away for a long, long time. And I know you know this, but with the flooding that's taking place up in Nebraska right now, for example, I mean, all that is going to end up right on your doorstep at some point. So good luck
coming our way. And you know, we've had one of our counties is entirely underwater practically, and no crops have been planted there due to the flooding. And you know, at one point we thought perhaps it might go down before the planting season ended, but that just didn't happen. And it's serious business, and looks like it's going to be a long rest of the year as well.
Yeah. Okay. Commissioner Gibson, if you would, please give us a brief definition of the labeling law that took effect in the state of Mississippi on July 1 as it pertains to the fake meats, the plant-based meats. How does it read?
It simply says that a plant-based food product shall not be labeled as meat are a meat food product. And the same thing applies to insect-based foods and cell-cultured foods. So that it was a law that was very simple, very clear. Actually, the meaning of meat and a meat food product is defined under Mississippi law to include basically a food product for human consumption derived from the carcass of livestock. And it's very clear. It made very good common sense. The legislature voted unanimously to pass it, not one single dissenting vote. And we got sued a couple of days before the 4th of July last week. In fact, on the day it went into effect, July 1st, we received notice that the state had been sued. I'd been named as a defendant by the Plant-Based Food Association and another private company.
Yeah, Upton's Naturals. I talked about it yesterday on the news, so I feel like I can go ahead and put that name out there again today in the conversation, Commissioner. Now, this is a law that was passed by the state legislature. If I understand it correctly, it's now your responsibility to enforce the law?
That is correct.
Do you agree with the law?
Oh, yeah, I do. I agree with the law. I agree with it. I have already drafted proposed rules to enforce it, common sense rules. And the bottom line is, if it's not meat, you can't call it meat. Meat has a meaning. It has a value to our consumers and, of course, to our farmers who are out there every day working and raising farm-raised meat. And we very, very much appreciate the hard work that goes into that every single day. So this is, I think the legislature did the right thing. I absolutely support the law. I intend to defend the law and to enforce it according to its intent.
Yeah, and to defend it through Is it going to get to trial, Commissioner, the case that's being brought by Upton's Naturals and the Plant-Based Food Association?
We know they sued us in federal court, and the wheels can turn slowly there. I will tell you that I have a meeting later today with some of our attorneys here to talk about our strategy and our goals. But one of the things we're trying to figure out is what they want. It seems that they want to be able to claim that it is meat, that these non-meat products are meat. And I can tell from their complaint they want to use the word beef. They want to have meatless beef, meatless corned beef, meatless pork, vegan bacon. I'm just going through the list here. And meatless meatballs, vegan jerky. So they're obviously intending to use words that are typically associated with meat food products.
And words that consumers are comfortable with. That's the reason that they want to use these words. They're comfortable with these words.
Yeah. And there's no indication that they're that they have any intent to refer to them as imitation or, non-meat products. So we're just going to... we're going to work on this. We're going to have discussions with the other side, figure out what it is that they're trying to accomplish. And, you know, you would think that if they're marketing to folks who don't want to buy meat, they wouldn't have a problem not calling it meat. You know, maybe I'm applying too much common sense here, but it seems to me that the folks who want to buy vegan burgers or whatever they are, that they would appreciate it not being labeled as meat or a meat food product. That's what the law says.
Right.
We're not trying to control the market here, tell people what they can or can't buy. You know, myself, my family, we prefer to buy and support real meat and meat food products. So we like that. And we're just trying to keep from happening to meat what unfortunately seems to have happened to the word milk, the loss of that meaning in the marketplace, and the blurring of lines as these new technologies develop.
Absolutely. Commissioner, one of the comments that I saw, and I think this was in a story from Bloomberg, and I really appreciated this coming from you, was not only are you trying to prevent someone like Upton Foods from saying it's, you know, meatless beef or whatever it is, but hey, if somebody wants to buy tofu, we shouldn't allow the meat industry to say that this is tofu-free tofu made of beef or anything like that. You can't fool people into buying what they don't want to buy.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Let's face it. It seems like we're living in a day where there are identity crises on every hand. People can't seem to figure out what things are, you know, what definitions mean. And at some point, as we said in the statement, words mean something. And meat definitely means something to American consumers, to Mississippi consumers. And it definitely means something to our farmers, including myself, who are raising fresh farm-raised food for our families. And so we just want to protect that meaning and, bottom line, prevent deceptive labeling, deceptive advertising. And it's not just in the grocery store. It's also equally applicable in a restaurant. You know,
absolutely,
you've got things appearing on the menu that look like meat, but you really don't know what you're getting. Yeah. So this would prevent a deception of claiming something's meat that is not.
Absolutely. Commissioner, we're going to keep tabs, close tabs, of how this progresses. I'd sure like to have you back on sometime. I hope we can do that.
We'd love to do that. Thank you for what you do, and appreciate you and your program.
Very good. Thank you so much. That is Commissioner Andy Gibson. He is the commissioner of the Mississippi Commission of Ag and Commerce. Davis, the IPO of Beyond Meat has pushed these fake meat, plant-based products into the mainstream spotlight. And issues like what Commissioner Gibson is going to be dealing with that lawsuit against the labeling laws in the state of Mississippi, are going to be front page news in a lot of newspapers, dude.
Well, and it raises a good point. Why, if you have chosen a non-meat diet as your lifestyle, why it makes no sense to call it meat, even to call it fake meat, or you know, to have meat anywhere in the in the title. I mean, margarine is its own term,
right? Yeah, that's right. You know, the Impossible brand, okay, with Pat Brown, CEO Pat Brown, one of his stated objectives is to end animal agriculture. I mean, we know that from Impossible Meats. From somebody like Upton's, we don't know that. They are there to serve the vegan community.
Sure.
Great. Good for you.
Yep.
That's awesome. But it's that... it's the battle within the battle that is taking place that makes it really interesting. We got Indigo Ag up next.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture is what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous one-month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
3, 2, 1. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ag Council, and Make Safe Happen.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America. And
then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Not in the market for a new planter, but looking to get better performance next season? Bring your trusted John Deere planter up to speed with our ExactEmerge upgrade kit. Hit the ground running without compromising singulation, population, spacing, or uniform depth. And now through July 15th, you can save 12% off the ExactEmerge and individual row hydraulic downforce upgrade kits. Visit your John Deere dealer today.
Let's have a conversation with Nick Hammett, Marketing Manager for Circle A Ranch. Nick, tell me about Circle A.
Circle A Angus started in 1990, headquartered here in Iberia, Missouri. We've grown to a little over 30,000 acres in three locations. Altogether, we're about 7,000 mother cows. We run about a 5,000 head feedlot operation at our Huntsville location. So Circle A is a little unique in that for the past 10 years, we've been creating and breeding a quarter blood Wagyu into our Angus cattle.
Why Wagyu, and what has been that sweet spot in terms of percentage Wagyu in your breeding operation?
For us, really, the ultimate eating experience has found to be a quarter blood Wagyu.
How does your herd health program tie into your overall goals?
Herd health is far and away the biggest profit driver in the calves that we purchase back into our feedlot. We know that with our genetics, our calves are going to grade well. We know they're going to gain well. It's a matter of whether they stay healthy as to whether or not we're going to make a profit on those calves.
Nick, how has Merck Animal Health helped advance your herd health protocols?
Merck has played a major role in helping advance our herd health protocols. They've really gone above and beyond just saying we have a good product into proving they have a good product, which has helped us not only on our operation, but for the calves that we buy from our customers.
How else have you worked with Merck Animal Health?
Merck has long been known for having the best implant products available in the market, but those extra days on feed required a little different implant protocol than what we were used to. Merck was willing and able to bring in their experts to set up an implant protocol specifically designed for our needs. They were also willing to bring in their sales force, sit down with our processing crew, and ensure that we were correctly applying those products into our cattle so that we were getting maximum return on our investment.
Thanks, Nick. Learn more at mahcattle.com or talk to your Merck Animal Health representative.
Hey, Jim, how would you describe our DC Signal to Noise podcast?
It's a dairy parlor analysis of the DC politics that impact America's farmers and ranchers.
Dairy parlor analysis? What do you mean?
No bull.
Download the DC Signal to Noise podcast with Jim Wiesmeyer and me, John Harith, every Friday on agweb.com, the AgriTalk app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We don't make the news, we render it. AgriTalk.
That's the first conversation that I've had with Commissioner Gibson Davis, and it certainly seems like the ag community down in the state of Mississippi has got somebody that's on their side down there.
Absolutely. Seems like a very level-headed guy, very reasonable fellow. I like it.
Yeah. Well, you know, on this issue of labeling, you know that he's already had to give it a lot of thought.
Sure.
Just simply because the state has passed the law, now he's got to implement it and enforce it. Mm-hmm. And now he's got this lawsuit on top of it. Yeah. So we like I said, we're going to keep tabs of what is going on down there in Mississippi, and we'll have another conversation with Commissioner Gibson sometime in the future and get an update on what is going on down there.
I think we'd better, yeah.
Yep. Speaking of updates, we've got an update coming from USDA's World Ag Outlook Board.
In just 9 minutes.
9 minutes away, and from the National Ag Statistics Service on the crop production report. And leading up to it, there is all kinds of speculation on what exactly USDA and the World Ag Outlook Board is going to do with corn and soybean yield projections, forecasts for the current year. Let's bring in Rodney Connor. Rodney is the Senior Director of Global Markets for Indigo Ag. He joins us right now. Rodney, it's good to talk with you.
Hey, Chip. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Like I said, a lot of speculation exactly what the World Board is going to do with the corn yield forecast, the bean yield forecast. Now, I know when Indigo Ag puts together your yield outlook for any given time, you don't care what USDA is going to say in this report. You've got your yield forecast that you are working with.
One of the benefits here at Indigo is we're really using a data science-driven approach to come up with these yield estimates, and we don't have a bias. We're it is important to note we're not trying to predict the USDA report that's coming out in 9 minutes now. We're looking at that total number at the end of the year.
Exactly. So, based on that, Rodney, what are you thinking on corn right now? USDA, back in on June 11, projected or forecast or guesstimated a corn yield of 166. What are you thinking now?
Yeah, so we're significantly lower than that. We published a 159.4 this morning is where we're sitting on corn yield. And that would be well below probably the average trade estimates out there today.
Yeah, and that's end of season forecast. That's not where you think it is right now. That's where you think it'll end up at the end of the season.
Correct. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So I'm a cash grain guy. My experience is, you know, in the cash grain markets, and I'm used to looking at these USDA reports and saying, hey, I think they'll come down this much this time and this much next time and so on. Indigo, we take a very scientific approach and skip that bias and just go publish our number that we believe is the number.
All right, so 159.4, I got that written down. The next part of the equation here, how many acres? What are you thinking on acres, Rodney, on corn?
Yeah, so this is the exciting one, 85.4 million acres on corn, significantly below, Yeah, and, you know, that I would say that number's caused some waves on Twitter. I saw when we published it here a few days ago, but I think it's important to note you know, we're using satellites and data science to come up with these numbers. My family farms here in northern Illinois, and our bean number, when Indigo published our bean number, our beans weren't quite yet out of the ground, so it's hard to pick those up, you know, yeah. from a satellite.
Yeah.
So for that, we're using some crop rotation data, some farmer intention data. We combine that with weather and soil moisture data that we had and did some inferences on what we think is planted there. And as the season progresses, we'll update that with actual,
right.
field-level data from the satellites.
Right, right. Okay, so we combine the acres with the yield, and you've got a crop, what, somewhere in that 12.5 billion bushel range?
12.4 billion, yep.
Okay.
You got it.
Okay, 12.4 billion. Let's move over to soybeans, Rodney. It's been a tough season for corn so far, but like you were just saying, I mean, this bean crop is so incredibly late. What's the development pace and conditions of the crop that has emerged? What's it tell you about yield?
Yeah, we're looking at a 47.6 yield right now nationwide. Okay.
47.6, got it. Part two of the equation.
On the lower end, but definitely not off the charts. On the soybean yield there.
Right, yep. Right. Yeah, I would agree with that. Part two of the equation then is acres. What are you thinking on acres?
We're at 89.3 million
That's
acres
a huge number.
So big number, yep.
Yeah, I mean, just call it 9.3 million acres above the estimate that we got from NASS at the end of June.
Yep, exactly. And again, you know, that's what the data tells us. So we definitely understand that, you know, you guys are going to argue with our data. Today, that's what the data tells us. And as we are able to update that information, we'll absolutely adjust those numbers.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, if you're looking at a 47.6 on 89.3, which is going to give you an 88.9 or something like that on the harvested acres, that's a crop north of 4 billion bushels, right?
Yeah, it comes to 4.2, and I just did the math here before I got on the phone. That puts us at about a 1.1 billion bushel carryout on soybeans next year, which would not be pretty. That would not be fun.
No, that's exactly right. I think people are kind of hoping that the acreage estimate that we got from NASS at the end of June down there around 80 million acres is going to get us under a billion bushels. But if we're up at 89.3 million planted bean acres, it's going to be tough to get that carryover for the 2019-20 marketing year back under a billion bushels. Hey, Rodney, thanks so much for this. I'd sure like to. We can't do it every month because it's going to take some of the value away from your customers. But I'd sure like to do this again sometime in the future and get your thoughts on what this crop is going to be doing.
We'd love to do it, and these numbers are available on Indigo Atlas Insights on our website. They can
Indigo
find them in real time.
Say it again.
So it's on our website, indigoag.com, and they're going to look under Atlas Insights.
Atlas Insights at indigoag.com. Rodney, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Chip.
You bet. That is Rodney Connor, the Senior Director of Global Markets at Indigo Ag. Wow. Some 12.4 billion bushels of corn, 4.2 billion bushels of beans. We'll see how that lines up with the numbers that we're going to get from the World Ag Outlook Board here in just a second. Thanks, Greg Henderson, Kevin Folta, and Andy Gibson for coming on the show today. Come back this afternoon. Davis and I are going to have all the details of the USDA reports.
In the world of cattle vaccines, when you see fewer reactions, you'll notice healthier cattle and higher profits, too. Because sometimes good protection is about what you don't see. Protect your productivity with cattle vaccines from Merck Animal Health. Proven to cause fewer reactions. You'll like what you see. Our trusted portfolio is just one more way Merck Animal Health works for you. Talk to your veterinarian and visit CattleFriendlyVaccines.com to learn more.
Attention, Iraq and Afghanistan veterans. If you use dual-ended combat arms earplugs and suffer hearing loss or tinnitus, you may be entitled to compensation. The manufacturer agreed to pay millions to settle allegations it sold defective earplugs to the military that were standard issue to soldiers deployed between 2003 and 2015. If you served during those years, were issued combat arms earplugs, and suffer from hearing loss or tinnitus, call now.
Call 800-820-1659. That's 800-820-1659.
The AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by the IBM Watson Decision Platform for Agriculture, leveraging unique data, analytics, and predictive insights to help growers make more informed, confident decisions.